Welcome to a Perfect Acceptable podcast, where every Tuesday we sort through all the books that are coming out this week. And once we're done counting and pulling the books for our subscribers, we each pick a book we're excited to talk about, and then we all run to our respective quiet places and read them before meeting back up to record this podcast, in which we talk about the books and engage in a variety of tangents that are either related to, or unrelated to, the books, our comic shop, or the coming and goings of our lives. During the podcast we will most certainly be talking about what happens in the books, so here's your spoiler warning. So if having these books spoiled bothers you, take a minute, pause the podcast, read your books, and then come back to us. This is Pepe Pete Producer.
I'm Jeffrey Figley.
I'm Justin Cassatt.
I'm Roman Statler.
And this is the first of two podcasts where we are down a Django. He's dead to us. Yep. But thank goodness we got Pete Ducer here to be reading those intros for us. You guys think that we should, I mean, because Django will be able to hear this.
Yeah.
He'll hear this while he's away.
He's busy partying
in New Orleans. You don't think that we should be honest about how totally screwed everything is here one day after his absence, right?
Hey, like, the fire got put out.
We didn't lose a lot of stuff. Should we just paint
it's like
it
a
like
tire a, fire in The Simpsons. It's just always going.
It's just always going.
In the background.
I literally got offered for an abduction outside the store today. And this is not even like, Django, you're gone. Someone was like, hey, guy, you want to go to church? And I said, no. I wish I had something more clever to say, but I was just like, no. And then they just drove off. And it was just a white van. So there you go, Django.
Oh,
people, you leave. And your boy is almost get abducted by some crazy
He's definitely like a protective armor for us. Yeah. And I guess that just talking about how
he wants
he's
to work around someone that smells like cayenne pepper and sex.
Yeah. That was what kept me here ultimately. This week we're going to be talking about The Visitor, How and Why He Stayed, number 1 by Mike Mignola and Chris Roberson. We'll also be talking about
Astro City number 41, which is actually the 100th Astro City story by Kurt, I always mess up his name. Buzik?
Actually, I don't want to give it away, but we're going to have some clarification on how
we
to
are.
Pronounce his name
okay,
here.
Okay, this
in the
is
future.
Exciting. Well, it's by Kurt, that guy. Clarification pending. Brett Anderson. Where's the credit page?
Brett Anderson and Alex Ross, the same three dudes that have done all of Astro City.
Yeah, really. Actually, it's the same three guys. That's and then impressive. Pentezis and Sinclair and Comicraft.
I'm excited to talk about that because, Justin, have you read an Astro City issue before?
No.
Cool. Well, we'll get to it.
I've read a lot of Astro City.
And also, Gabriel Hardman's The Belfry, written and drawn by Gabriel Hardman.
And then finally, we're going to talk about The Old Guard, number 1, by Greg Rucka and Leandro Fernandez, I believe is his Leandro Fernandez. Colors by Daniela Miwa. That's the docket for today. It's episode 18.
18.
Wow.
You guys, when was the last time we stuck to anything? This is 19 podcast.
Wow.
When was the last time we did anything 19 weeks in a row? Like stuck to anything?
Jeez, I don't know.
Wow.
Breathe?
Yeah, that's true. I've been breathing that long.
I've definitely been pooping that long.
Yeah.
And peeing.
I've got the pictures to prove it.
Yeah?
That's a
Jeff helped train me finally. Potty trained me.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of training both ways that's going on in this relationship.
Yeah.
Django, we're going to record the podcast. I'm going to hang out for a good while afterwards because we've got some till wonky things, and I am going to work hard to resolve those. It's the kind of thing that I would just hand off to you if you were here, but I guess that this puts me in
the thing. I mean, we don't miss you. But the thing that was good about having him around is you'd be like, I don't know what to do with this money stuff. And you would see his little rat fingers expose themselves and count the money in a weird way really quickly. And he would kind of make that
his counting to himself sound that sounds like the bad guy from Captain Planet that was like the rat guy in the blue outfit with the hood. Purple hood.
Yep.
You know, what was his name?
I don't know.
Something. He was a good one.
Turns the bills sideways, claps them on the table. With the bills, so I don't know why he does that. I think it makes him feel like a banker.
He claps it and then does the
yep.
He loves to hear it.
And then he goes, all right, removes his hands from the money, and then we'll go to, it's usually Jeff, sometimes me, who was like, okay, I'll listen to the way he breaks it down. And then he breaks it down with his hands in the air, showing us what he thinks his hands look like when he, like, all right, so this amount is in this and this, and then we're both like, okay, 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 and then problem solved.
Yeah, I think that he uses his hands to talk in those situations to feel like he's holding the world.
Yeah.
Because that's ultimately what he's getting at.
Really, the entire cosmos.
Yeah, the cosmos. Oh, wow. So Verminous Scum is the Captain Planet character that most reminds us of Django Boren. You know, I've heard Django say at times that listening to this podcast has made him realize that he needs to be nicer to Justin. And I think having him not here and Justin here gives us the perfect situation for maybe Justin to take the role of Django and realize that he could be nicer to Django.
Oh, like, yeah.
We're 4 minutes into this thing, and I've heard more venom from you towards him than I've heard on a podcast maybe in 19 weeks.
I love making fun of that guy.
It's true. And speaking of which, I picked Frostbite number 4. No, he's current on that book, though.
He let us know. But it's because I love him.
It's, yeah, moment of silence for our fallen, actually, you know what? Here, this one's for Django.
Django.
We love you. And that's all over the carpet now. The visitor and how and why he stayed. Guys, which of the three of us knows the most about Hellboy? I'm looking at Roman.
Yeah, I had a stint.
I don't know as much about Hellboy as I should.
I had a flirtatious relationship with him for a while.
Well,
but...
maybe you're the one.
No, I think I
read a lot. I read the first like 3 or 4 years of Hellboy.
Oh, you got me. And I've read like 4 trades, maybe at max.
But then I lost track because, you know, now it's been around for, what, 15, 20 years?
Yeah, a long time.
So I'm not... And basically this one shot is the visitor is a alien, we think.
Interdimensional
interdimensional mm-hmm. being.
5-issue mini.
It is 1 of 5. For some reason, I thought it was just a one shot.
Yeah.
I read all my books like in 40 minutes, so they all kind of blurred together.
We're all stepping up a little bit without Django. Yeah. So the books were all pretty rushed this week.
Yeah. Well, the visitor, this being was there when Hellboy first arrived on Earth, and he's been there observing Hellboy throughout Hellboy's life so far.
A non-present babysitter in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like my dad.
I was going to say my parents.
Yeah. Apparently had a mission to eliminate Hellboy because they were aware of his father and whoever Hellboy's mother was, which I don't know if they've ever revealed anything about.
No, but they were talking about it here.
Yeah, they mentioned it.
Maybe a name for this issue is Daddy Issues.
Yeah.
His dad is the big bad, right?
Satan?
I think so.
I think he's Satan.
Or is he just a demon?
He's somebody real bad because he goes to hell and they're like, no.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Guy.
They're all like, yeah.
Hellboy, he's supposed to be real bad. And I think his mom's supposed to be real good.
I've worked at this store for almost 4 years now. I should absolutely know more about Hellboy than I do. That's a foregone conclusion for me at this point. So I feel bad. Roman, it sounds like you also have not really read much, but you've worked in comic shops for 36 years.
I used to get all the Hellboys. I was a subscriber to Hellboy for the first few years of its run, and then I got way behind like I did on so many things.
Well, he's writing 9 books. Like he's
Yeah, I mean, I know the basics of Hellboy, and at one point he got killed and went to hell.
And that's where Justin has read, right?
I've read that, and I've read... So some of the Hellboy books, graphic novels, either came out as a miniseries or they read like they do, and they're just like, this is not Hellboy in continuity, this is Hellboy just when he was in Mexico. I read that one.
Yeah.
And Hellboy when he was killing some monsters, you know. But Hellboy in Hell was the two trades that I really liked. And I've gotten Hellboy books when I was a kid and don't know kind of where they were in the continuity. I've looked up a Hellboy How to Read guide like multiple times in my life. Like, I'm going to go through that because I love that world. I love Hellboy. But some of like when you're reading it feels kind of, and no offense, Mike, kind of dry sometimes. You know, I'm lost on it a little bit. But I love, like, that guy's, like, the best world builder. Like, I think, you know, years down the line, he'll be recognized as the best world builder in comics for a long-standing period of time. Like, everything feels fleshed out all the time.
Yeah, I love that he writes, you know, pretty much most of this world. And there's just a whole slew of artists that basically their job is to imitate his art style.
Yeah.
And this one...
I love him as an artist, too. I love Mignola's art.
Like, yeah.
I've gone and got variant covers to get his art. I like his art.
What do you like about it? Not a challenging way. I just...
I don't know. It's kind of chunky and toony. It really reminds me, and I'm forgetting his name, the guy that did Dexter's Lab and stuff. Yeah, like, yeah. It reminds me of, like, I don't know. And for a long time as a kid, I kind of, like, thought of stuff in cartoon. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, I don't know. It reminds me of how I think I would draw if I could draw, or I don't know. There's something really kind of familiar and homish to me about his art. This is not quite his art.
No, it's not. No,
this is Paul Grist, but he's definitely in that same kind of Mignola.
I love style, the flatness. In a way.
It definitely, like, all of the Hellboy World stuff is flat. Yeah, it's like intentionally two-dimensional. So we've got this interdimensional alien thing that is basically... It seems like it was given a mission to kill Hellboy when Hellboy was born in this planet. Or extra-dimensionally pooped out onto this planet. And he's just like... He was supposed to kill it, but for some reason he didn't. And now he's just hanging out with this weird box that can bend time. And it looks like maybe some of the successes that Hellboy has had are actually the byproduct of this guy making sure he stays safe.
Yeah, and... So we're kind of following this guy, following Hellboy as he grows up.
Yeah.
And we're seeing Hellboy in non-conventional, until the end of the issue, Hellboy things. Like, it's Hellboy walking the dog, Hellboy doing little things in his life.
Hellboy and we're making a peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah. Hellboy cutting his man bun.
That's a thief. Gotta put it there.
Why was I born balding?
I've never had hair.
Just on this one ring.
2 years of hair post-puberty. I've been balding since 18.
Yeah. Why do I wear the same coat all the time?
It's all I have.
Yep. And we see Hellboy kind of being a nice guy.
Well, isn't he a nice guy?
Well, I mean, he is a nice guy, yeah, but we're seeing him being like...
He's like a Ben Grimm. He's gruff, but he's part of gold.
I know Hellboy as told by Guillermo del Toro, and only the one time I saw those.
I liked those movies a lot as a kid. Yeah. I love occult detective genre, and I liked thinking of, like, what if the X-Men were in the 50s and, like, tracking down... I used to want to be a cryptozoologist. I used to think I could go out and find, like, Bigfoot. So I was like, what if there's a team of those guys and one of them is a devil? I love that idea.
And you haven't seen Monster Squad.
I haven't seen Monster Squad.
You're the guy who hasn't seen Monster Squad. Yeah. I think the only other time we've talked about this was on this podcast. Yeah. But, like, we're going to watch it.
Yeah, we got
cryptozoologists for days.
Oh, yeah. I like the alien guy.
Yeah.
You know, he does what aliens was, do. They observe.
He was a cutie. I wanted to read this because he was a cutie. You know?
I like
He's
the
got a little box.
I like the little, like mother box iPhone thing he's got.
Well, he's got a dark side thing going for him. It's like a little, like he's an got adolescent that, dark that side.
Side, cheek, ear, chin.
Yeah, he looks more like a...
Cowl thing going on.
And I don't know how to qualify this, but he looks more like an interdimensional traveler rather than an alien.
Well, it's like, the armor.
Yeah.
It's those screws in his neck.
Yeah, it's like he can move through dimensions rather than a ship bringing him from far. You know, he's like... Beep. You know, he... Yeah, those are sound effects that I gave to a guy jumping through dimensions. But he looks more like something from another realm than another planet.
This is neither.
Well, though really, wouldn't an interdimensional being still be alien to us? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
if you're being pertinent question.
If you're being reductive, guy.
This is neither here nor there, but I didn't remember it until you just said that. And last night I had a dream that you and I. Like, Makeshift was having some sort of local music thing.
As they do.
An all-ages music show. And you had convinced me that you and I were going to do a show. And you were going to sing, and I was going to do the music. And it was a cover of some song I can't remember now. And I remember at one point thinking, like, is Justin able to, like, can he sing? Is this a thing that we're going to do? Like, I'll go do this.
I'll tell you what. There was a time in my life, maybe 16 through secretly 21, but I'll say 18, that I was convinced that I knew how to sing. But I'm also tone deaf as fuck, so no one but my car seats know me singing. But yeah, I used to really want to sing. I used to like singing, but yeah, we're not going to play that show.
See, I've just got an image now. Okay,
we got to bail on that show because like we were on our way to the show.
Because I've got an image now. You guys on stage and Justin do this. Doing a Jim Morrison act.
We wanted to do a futuristic space western, like musical opera at one point.
Yeah, we wanted to do. Man, there was some sentences said about that thing that I'm forgetting right now.
Yeah,
but we were jacked on it for a weekend.
So I just don't have a lot of context for this Hellboy issue.
You see that birth scene in the beginning?
Yeah.
In like every Hellboy issue.
Yeah, every miniseries is like, remember that time Hellboy showed up here?
Popped out of that dimension.
And I've tried. I read the first couple issues of Hellboy in Hell. I read the first time that the Hellboy BPRD miniseries started with Maleev doing art on it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm tired of hearing about his birth scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know nearly enough to go or appreciate anything beyond that. But it's a hugely popular thing. Like, he kind of is credited as keeping comics relevant during a period where they weren't really. It was like Frank Miller and Mike Mignola were like keeping people reading it, as far as I know.
Yeah. They seem kind of like that book that's always has devoted fans but never sells a lot. Like people come in.
ElfQuest.
Yeah, people who like Hellboy and or ElfQuest or Prophet, motherfuckers. Like, love that world so much because you can kind of fall into it and get lost. And if you're someone who wants to get lost in something, you can sit there and kind of dazzle about it forever. And that's what I liked about it. Like, well, this happens here, and this happens over here, but clearly there's all this space. How do we get into there and figure out what's going on? Like, you can endlessly kind of ruminate over what's going on. This issue, to me, I was more bored with it than I... I'm trying to find words.
Compare it to a snack food.
It was a Dorito.
Can you give me a flavor?
Which flavor?
Like what corner of the Dorito arena are we in?
Oh, well, like Hellboy, the Dorito...
Welcome to the Octagon.
It's huge. The Dorito world and the Hellboy world.
Yeah, that's true. You got those three corners.
It was a cool ranch. You know, it cooled ranch to me. Like, Yeah, there's some taste. It's slightly cool and slightly ranchy, but, like, I don't know the full breadth of the story to see why it's important to have someone watching Hellboy. And spoilers. You know, we see Hellboy go to hell. Like, the whole thing about Hellboy is he's going to become the Destroyer.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the whole buildup. Is like, he's a really good guy, but he's going to murder everything. And I kind of saw the climax of that. And I feel like the alien is now watching him trying to decide if Hellboy is going to be that Destroyer or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read Hellboy in Hell, you kind of see, like, a roundabout climax and how that worked out to be. And I think that book played that very well. It was kind of both and not at the same time. This, so I'm like, I'm reading kind of a follow-up to something that, not knowing a lot of Hellboy, so I don't know the character super well, I also know how he's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I don't know why I'm following this alien guy, studying him around.
So similarly, I would say that if this were a Dorito, it would be like a sizzling buffalo.
Well, I haven't had that one.
Exactly. It's a flavor that exists as a curiosity.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that Dorito. I'm going to get a bag of it. I'm going to eat several, you know. I'm going to try it out.
And you're probably going to be like, that's not the worst one.
Exactly.
They all give you bad breath in the end.
Exactly. But the idea of, I was like, I don't know what this visitor character is, and I don't know how and why he stayed.
Yeah.
So the whole thing basically was predicated on a mystery to me of, like, what is this idea? And the idea of him, I was supposed to get rid of Hellboy, but now I don't know if he's good or bad, so I'm just going to hang out in the backgrounds and watch and see if he should get taken out or not, is not a compelling how and why he stayed. I was thinking, like, oh, like, some aspect of the whole Hellboy universe that I never knew about, but it's like, oh, no, I'm just a watcher. You know, like, Well, I don't want to read five issues of you just watching this character who I already know how it ends.
Yeah, and I know how, like, if I wanted to watch the character, I could just go read the 9 billion books.
I know how it ends. It's bad breath.
Yeah. I thought that helped to build Hellboy, but didn't build the story. Like, oh, then now there's a guy that is worried about Hellboy's Pat, and that kind of fleshed it out that everyone else was under the impression that Hellboy may, you know, go crazy and fuck stuff up. But I don't think it justifies the book. It justifies Hellboy. It deepens Hellboy's character without justifying a whole book.
Roman, what flavor Dorito is this book to you? Or if you feel strongly it's a different snack, what
would
it be?
I'm not sure if I know my Dorito flavors that well.
Mm. Well, then, I mean, you can change the snack, baby.
Yeah,
on
the craft service table of life. Yeah. Like, you are welcome to pick from any bowl you like.
You know, I may be in the minority here, but I do not like Swedish fish.
Okay.
Okay.
Just Okay, they're the ones that are the red Sour Patch Kids without sour on them.
No, the little orange fish cracker.
They're
things.
Red. They're deep red. Are they red? And they're very chewy, and they have the best sugar.
Well, is this a Swedish fish to you?
Well, actually, no. I don't know why I brought that one up, because it's that, not as bad as a Swedish.
And is that the same as a red herring?
No.
Okay,
that
they
was...
look similar. I get my fish confused.
That's the name. That's the name. My that's my the name. My detective character. Actually, no. That was Red Valiant, named after my favorite car.
Mine's Swedish fish.
Swedish fish.
Speaking of pseudonyms, Justin, there are some requests under Lamont Cranston's name. I need you to get online and check those. Just deal with those accordingly.
I'm busy doing a podcast, but I will accordingly as soon as I can.
Only the shadow knows how to respond on Facebook.
So what do you got for me, Roman?
I'm kind of feeling the way you guys are. I really like the art in here. It's always fun seeing Hellboy. I like the way Paul Grist draws young Hellboys, like nonplussed, like just grim,
cute,
slit of
the
mouth.
And flat.
Yeah, yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10 Djangos, how many Djangos would you give it?
1 to 10 Djangos.
I would like this very much.
Well, that's not what I'm asking. Well, I'm asking yeah, how many Djangos do you give it?
I like,
and then what do we think Django would give it?
I like this fight. Oh, is that what we're doing? I like this fight here at the end. I like the thing going on with Hellboy's.
I love the clever play of time there.
That the flowers grow out of his footsteps. I forgot that that happened. Happens.
The bleeding thing was a good way to pull you through the book.
Yeah, because throughout the book, I was like, that was the main compelling thing for me. Throughout the book, I was like, what's going on with these background panels with blood drops from on high, and that has a nice comes together nicely at the end with the fight with the snake,
so
with the worm. I would give it I would give it 4 Djangos.
Okay, I will give it I will also give it 4 Djangos.
I will give it 3.5 Djangos, but I have a question that could lead to another Django.
Okay.
His floaty, shiny, flickery box thing.
Yes.
Does that change time, or does it decay? Or I guess that's still time, but can it decay matter or bring matter back?
That's, I don't know.
To me, it kind of, that's how I read it. It was like he made the thing older, but he didn't necessarily bring it through time, or like he kind of reversed the aging process on that thing.
That is a more in-depth assessment of that box than I gave it. I registered it as
plot device.
Plot device, a little deeper than that, just sort of like matter effector. Like it was just sort of like dimensional rearranger. He could make things do things with that, sort of like a sonic screwdriver or something.
Oh, so I was like looking at it, and I kind of thought that it was like either pushing things through time or yanking them back through
time.
That's
a cooler idea.
And that's why he decayed the thing and it fell. Like he was like, oh, I'm going to make this thing old so it falls and...
I just viewed it as like, I'm going to make that thing fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did the same as Jeff, and I like your idea better because that's much more complex
and
interesting.
I think Django gave this book a 5.
I think Django would be impressed by the plot device thing being doing what it did at the end. I think he'd be like, yeah, I like that, the way that felt like that, and speared the dragon.
Yeah, you're right.
That would be his...
A little higher than us.
His
I mean, I like
silver
that.
Lining.
Yeah, he would have found that.
Yeah.
Okay.
His brimstone lining.
that's how he works. All right, well, that's The Visitor, How and Why He Stayed. Let's move on to a franchise that I do have a little bit more emotional investment in, Astro City number 100. We thought this would be interesting because it's the 100th issue of this series. Also, Justin has never read it, and it seemed like an easy way to make him read a book that I think that he would like. I really like this series... Roman.
Yes.
You've probably been reading this since around it started, right? Not a shot at your 36-year-old age.
I have.
Some 99 issues into a Dorito.
I've missed some issues kind of in the last couple of years right in there. But yeah, for the most part, I read all the original story arcs, the Tarnished Angel, all that stuff.
I really like Astro City, and I feel like a Roman type would really like it because it's just an... ultimately a huge homage, like the Silver Age of comic books.
Yeah, it's one of the few titles I still actually... have in my pull list that I subscribe to.
And kind of like you said about Mignola's world building, I feel like Kurt Busiek, particularly with Astro City, like this goes down as world class world building.
Yeah.
So Justin, this issue was really cool. It just paints sort of a really early history of Astro City and how it got its name and sort of one of the first heroes in Astro City. Yeah. And in doing so, like, it just seemed like a really effortless extension of the city, of Astro City. Like, just like, oh, here's a whole corner of the history of this town for this one issue. And that's kind of a thing that Astro City just does. Like, it's this huge city within the United States that doesn't exist somewhere particularly, and superheroes are there.
Yeah, and there's parts of the city that, I mean, they've kind of got their, like, Gotham part of the city, and they're overall it's more like Metropolis, I guess, but there's the Gotham parts and the, like, Peter Parker, Brooklyn parts.
It's basically like if one guy got to do Marvel in the Silver Age, that's what it is. So it's been the same writer, the same artist, and then Alex Ross doing covers for essentially every issue. I think Brett Anderson has missed a couple issues over 100, and they've been doing it forever. And I love... It's like watching a Christmas story at Christmas to me. It's just like it just kind of takes you out and puts you into a different world of comic books for a minute. This had a lot of words in it.
It was really wordy. Having a superhero homage within a superhero story that somehow, in kind of a meta way, encapsulates all what superheroes could be, to me is not something... At this time in my life, I was interested in. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love this issue. The things that they addressed in it, the kind of idea of the proto-superhero being someone that is uncharacteristically optimistic and, like, it's essentially of the history of how Superhero City is built and structured and why these things happen, in a way, is because of kind of this secret person that everyone... Like, they kind of paint to seem in the beginning, like, is he crazy? Is he not? What is true and what is not? Like, he's this doorway to possibility, and it breaks down, like, the story of a man who totally represents possibility, and that's kind of what superheroes are about. Mm-hmm. Like, it isn't so much about what you find on that alien planet or, you know, what happens after the battle. It's about the battle and the finding of the alien planet. It's about, like...
It could happen.
And the fact that we could pursue that. And it kind of goes through the secret history of kind of the first Superman, like the super guy who's going to go out and against all odds of the world, against, like, the slowly growing more and more real world. And all these people are kind of breaking in. Fiction keeps breaking in. These, like, goofy... Not like these superhero characters are breaking in, and it's all kind of a product of this guy's, like, omnivision of, like, everything is possible if you're willing to make it possible. That, like, I was in Starbucks today reading and drinking coffee, and it hit me over the head. Like, I was like, holy shit, I guess that's why, like, I was drawn to superheroes as possibility. Huh. And in, I don't know how many pages this is.
It's a big one.
It kind of did that and told in the narrative of kind of the mystique person that's gone now.
Yeah, and so much of the crux of this issue was the idea that, like, this society had a superhero, and then, as with all things, a backlash occurred, and then the society kind of chose to take out the deference and respect for him and decide to be cynical instead. And that is even just sort of, like, what I get out of Grant Morrison comics, is that sort of the message of that, like, yeah, we're all cynical now. Like, we get that. Frank Miller made us all cynical. Mm-hmm. Fine. It's cooler to not be cynical, but it's easier to be cynical. My least favorite thing about Astro City comics generally is the art, but then it's the Astro City artist. Like, is it Frank Quitely? No, not at all. But it's the guy that does Astro City. And to me, that makes it, like, really perfect. In the way that, like, you know, I think J.H. Williams III is kind of the Batwoman artist. Mm-hmm. And, like, even unfortunately in Rebirth issues of that, like, they have to kind of quote his art, which you don't need to do anymore. But I really like, I'm always sort of like, ooh, this art. But then, like, I get several pages in, I'm just like, this is the art for this story.
And that's what I did. I kind of criticized it and then stepped back and I was like, well, there is a lot of layers and... like, statements on the history of comics and on the histories of people that's kind of going in with the art, and the art feels absolutely necessary to the story that's being told, even if it's not my style of art.
And a cool thing about Astro City is this shit, it's usually story arcs that are like one issue, a lot of one and dones, a lot of two issue arcs, a lot of four issue arcs, and it kind of sticks around there. And it's always just sort of like, look at these people that live in this town. And it always just flushes out this town and this world that we live in. But then you see all these little nods to it. Like, you'll just be reading a book and you'll be like, oh, that's that character from the Confessor storyline.
Yeah. Yeah. And they reference in here, like, just a few issues, storylines ago, they show two characters that I think have first appeared in this last year. One is the Zoot Suit guy. And the fact they referenced, I mean, that was a real thing that happened in L.A. in the 20s, 30s, the like Zoot Suit riots. Mm-hmm. And just like nowadays, at the time it was Zoot Suits, nowadays it's hoodies.
Yeah.
You know, it comes to represent to some people, not vilify.
Yeah, yeah.
A class of people as hoodlums or whatever. And there's a character in here that shows up in this last year, and they show him, I forget his name, but he's basically a zoot-suited superhero.
Mm-hmm. I love that character.
Yeah, they showed the one psychedelic guy that showed up like the issue after that or the issue before that, and I forget his name. But he was the one that was the green guy that was just kind of outside the panels.
Oh, yeah, he reminds me of the guy from Shade. He's kind of like Shade.
Yeah.
From Starman, just this sort of interdimensional character that has cropped up at different times in Astro City.
Yeah.
What do you think, Roman?
I really liked it, but you know, I love Astro City for all the usual reasons that people love Astro City. Trying to reach the book here. I really like the fact that this character, the Astronaut, who's one of their first generation superheroes in the city.
He's how, the like, founder.
Justin. Well, I thought there was somebody before him.
The guy scooting around on an engine?
Yeah, well, that was him.
Oh, was that his first?
But there was somebody
else,
the something Ace or something they mentioned that was even before him. But I love the fact that you were saying he's all about hope. He's optimistic. I mean, he goes through this tragedy, but he's always hopeful. And he reaches a point because he reminded me of Tony Stark. But unlike Tony Stark, who's, you know, a product of Marvel and always has to return to the same status quo, they can't really do much with him. I mean, they do lots of little things. Now he's dead currently. But, you know, he's been president. He's been Secretary of Defense, whatever. Now he's dead. He's been evil, all this stuff. But he always returns to being Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm. Comics,
and this,
baby.
And this character, like Tony Stark, he's an inventor. They don't use the term futurist, but he's basically a futurist. Mm-hmm. He's got this brilliant knack. But he reaches a point through his experiences where he's... realizes that if the human race, you know, continues to advance the way it is using technology, we're going to go out in space like these aliens he's fought. And yeah, and we're going to mess things up because we're not emotionally, philosophically ready to use the technology we can invent in anything but destructive ways. And so he sets about to stop that. I was like, wow, that's what Tony Stark could do if he wasn't within the strictures of being a Marvel product.
You can't ever change.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so kind of Watchmen-y. Like that part reminded me of sort of the culmination of Watchmen.
And people were revolting against him and kind of turning on him after adoring him for a while.
Yeah.
And I think, and something that I really like when I see in fiction is the idea of like, yeah, we may have this impulse to go do, but should we?
Mm-hmm.
Like, should we go out like, we're not spiritually or, you know, psychologically capable of doing anything but murdering each other. So why do we think that if we go out there, anything's going to change? You got to start at home to get anywhere else. You got to start where you are.
Yeah.
And he saw that, but then still he kind of came back and was like,
"Yeah, he's still-
this is a part of your process. Like, you got to be cynical. You got to hate everybody. You're going to, like, turn on each other before you get good. So I'm going to come back and save your ass, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, you have to move on. You have to grow." He kind of represented, like, human progression in a tiny way. I don't know. Mm. I loved this issue. I did not expect, like, wanting a superhero comic like what this was. But
I think that this series to me really is... I think that Justin and I both have a sort of inherent jaded aspect of ourselves that we... always try to fight as well, but as the internet was telling us just earlier, like we you know, it's because we're looking for that 1% of the world, so we become a little bit jaded. And I feel like this this series is a really great combat for that. It's really like every month these same guys are writing a love letter to comic books, and they get to do it totally on their own terms, and every character is their own character, and it's brutal at times, it's sad at times, it's really hopeful at times. It's a nice centering thing. It's never my favorite comic book, but it's just kind of a pill you take to not hate the world so much, yeah, if that makes sense.
It felt like coming back home for a second.
Yeah, just sort of like, remember when you were 15, you didn't care so much about everything needing to be great?
Mm-hmm.
Bam.
Yeah, I mean, Astro City, I mean, it's all those different, excuse me, all those different aspects. It's a love letter to everything absolutely that's great about comics.
And it sort of drives, I think, cynicism from you. And I think this was a little, like, slightly more literal instance of that. So how many Silver Djangos would you give it, Justin?
A Silver Django, I would give it a 7.5 Silver Djangos. And
wow.
I don't know if I'll read another Astro City, because that kind of encapsulated what I thought that series was in an issue. I give it 7 star-lined Astro Djangos.
Oh, you got to read Tarnished Angel.
Yeah, or The Confessor. There are some really good, like the first 12 issues of Astro City are really, really good.
I'd say even a storyline shortly before this, where it's set in, if I remember correctly, 1920s, 30s, Louisiana, deals with some race relations stuff and the jazz scene. Yeah, it was good stuff.
Word.
Roman, how many Silver Djangos would you give it?
Ja Roman? I would give it 8.
8 Silver Djangos.
Yeah.
I'm going to do 7.
Seven Silver Djangos.
And I think that Django, wow, so here's a moment. Do you guys think that Django gets Astro City? I don't think he does.
I don't know. No. I've never heard him talk about it.
And if he did, it's in like an internal obligation.
I think that he would really like Astro City.
Yeah.
I think that he would obligatorily follow through on it, but I think that he would like it. So I think that he would give that a 7.
Yeah.
Or a 6.5.
I think maybe a 7.
He likes when history is incorporated in a way that's intelligent.
I think that he likes remembering that he loves comic books.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a minute to talk about the Belfry. Some last minute stuff came up. I wasn't able to read the Belfry, but Roman and Justin both did. I was excited about this. Tell me about this book.
Blah.
Oh, really? That is such a bummer.
I love the art.
I read it twice, and the first time I had no idea what was going on, because the art is kind of perfectly scratchy. Like, it's just kind of hard to follow. I don't know. And at the end, once I kind of realized what was going on, it was pretty cool. I felt like it would have made a really good episode of The Twilight Zone.
I listened to a podcast with him a couple weeks ago, and he compared it, to a sort of Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, Twin Peaksy book. So that sounded really interesting to me. Yeah. I don't know anything about it. Can you tell me about what happened in it? Like, what was it?
So the plot of Belfry, I really like this art. I mean, it was scratchy, but I didn't have too much trouble following it. Starts off with a plane crash, or the aftermath of a plane crash, pretty nasty plane crash. Seeing who survives here. And then there's this horrible Batwoman creature on the nose cone. And she looks at I forget who this guy is. She looks at the main character, and she attacks him, blah, 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 takes off. He kind of flashes back to right before the crash. Then he wakes up with the other survivors, and they start talking, trying to figure out what's going on here. And I like the atmosphere of this. That was awful. I like the atmosphere here. It kind of reminded me of, Twilight Zone, Twin Peaks, maybe the Descent, if it had been done by David Lynch. That's cool. They eventually encounter, there's a whole bunch of these bat creatures out there. They're taken captive by the batty creatures. And I like this. They do this angling with the panels.
Kind of pretty cool 15 degree angles on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, kind of mirroring the action, the chaos of the moment, but also I thought the actual bat wing, because these bat people are, their arms become the wings, just like an actual bat.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, actually, that's really interesting. The paneling kind of mirrors the...
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess what I want to know... Actually, I really want to hear... Sorry, how it wraps up. Not to interrupt. Let me hear.
Oh. They get taken captive. I'm not sure what
happened. Bat cult.
Yeah, what happened here, because he gets caught and tossed down this tunnel and ends up naked. So it's like the Batman TV show with their, except in reverse. They go down the poles, and all of a sudden, instead of in their costumes,
I was thinking of
naked.
Batman the Animated Series. I was like, how many times do I 66. See anybody in that show naked?
Well, maybe that's just the special Yugoslavian imports I've been watching.
Oh, wow. Adam West never looked so good.
He tanned.
So yeah, he ends up down here. He finds his survivor friends, Janet. They're all naked. They're in cages.
Some of them have their eyes poked out.
Yeah, some of them have their. You slowly find out that some of them have their eyes poked out, which is apparently something the bat people do to you. The bat cultist.
Vampires.
If you don't turn into a bat person, they take your eyes out.
We're not sure. So you're useless.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't escape. You can't rebel against them. You're just blind and.
Staggering
around down there.
So they're building their population by plane crashes. So you're a plane crash victim. You get bitten. If you don't change, you get kind of turned into a vegetable or an invalid, and you're left into the prison to rot. And then if you get turned into a bat thing, you go cause plane crashes.
So it's basically the backstory to the Twilight Zone episode, Horror at 10,000 Feet or whatever, the white Michael Shatner one. William Shatner, rather. Sorry, Will.
Well, that was a gremlin, though.
It was a gremlin. It was a, you know, it was a thing.
Yeah, it was an
anonymous fictional character.
Yeah, our main character there, well, big spoiler, at the very last page, he's flying along and he's looking behind him and then he looks forward and just in time to run headfirst into the props of an oncoming plane. So his character no longer matters.
So it's pretty one-shotty?
It's super one-shot. I interpreted that as him causing the next plane so they can cull more people. I think some people could read that as him killing himself.
Or him maybe accidentally. I mean, I think it was an accident, but he does end up, I'm sure, providing the next crop.
I thought it was intentional. I thought that was like the cycle repeats every
because he turns his
He says wah,
and he's like whoa.
Oh, I guess surprised. I didn't notice really pay attention to that panel, and I was already thinking of the Twilight Zone, so I thought like yeah, you go cause plane crashes to get more, you know. Food or
oh, I think you're right. They do that on purpose. It's just him in a panic. I think did it accidentally.
Yeah,
served his purpose anyway.
So this guy does, and I can't remember the word difference. So if you want to send us a voicemail, just correcting me. But Gabriel Harbin does either. I'm pretty sure he does the storyboarding and not the screenwriting, but the storyboarding for all of Christopher Nolan's movies.
He's a storyboarder.
Yeah,
and in the back he talks about how he does the layouts and stuff and the art for Invisible Republic, but doesn't write it. Yeah. I thought he was like a super one-man show, but his wife writes the stuff.
Yeah,
his storyboards.
And they do a bunch of stuff together, and they did a bunch of Planet of the Apes stuff together.
Yeah, and they
he's
talk
in the
about
Nolan
that.
Movies. He's doing the new Logan movie that's coming out.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So and he's done some other like big Marvel stuff. So he's like
he's a bad boy.
He's a bad boy.
Oh, well, maybe a bad boy.
But he's
boy.
Also doing comic books because he he's loves bad, comic bad books. Like he's clearly got a career elsewhere.
Well, there's a write up in the back like, hey guys, I had some scenes in my head I wanted to get out. And I've been doing like long form storytelling so much lately that I wanted to do a one and done. I wanted to get some shit out. I wanted to make something. And in that way, like I don't know. Once again, expectation.
Yeah.
Like I was reading this expecting to get more of a story, and now is it as just like a moment in a world? I like that. Like I like the idea of some bat island out there where bat people come and call you, and you know they have their own tribal rights and stuff. I guess I was expecting. More of a story where this was more of just like a well done filler of your time.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize it was just a one shot until I got to the end and read the text stuff.
Yeah,
text pieces.
So, how many spooky Djangos would you give it?
A spooky Django? I think Django would like this book.
No. I don't want to know what Django thinks of it yet. I want to know on a scale of 1 to 10 spooky Djangs, how many spooky janks
it gets. So if I had pins of Django's face on my collar, how many I would put?
Yeah, I'm picturing like a Django with like a really cheesy Django picture with little vampire fangs and little blood. Like how many?
He already has big collars.
Yeah, how many spooky jangs does the Belfry get from each of you?
I'd give it a 5.
I was gonna say a 5 spooky jangs.
It was cute in a way that like it's not cute at all because there's like these naked, darkened like bat things biting each other to create this weird death cult. But in that way, it was kind of cute.
I didn't think cute, but yeah, I know what you mean. It's for what it is. It's a satisfying little spooky read. I like the art. I like naked bat people.
I really like the art in it, and in the same way that I, after hearing about it, probably don't really want to see La La Land because I, you know, a month and a half ago, me wanted to see that movie. And then for the last month and a half, all I've heard is that it's amazing. I almost just want to exist with it not in my head. Mm-hmm. So The Belfry, to me, looks like it's like a 7. Maybe I'll never read it to have that disproven.
Well, I feel like I go low, so.
I think you go low. I think you go low, read it. It's like a solo do low.
Oh, yeah, like a drop it low.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring it up slow. Or
drop it like it's hot.
Yeah.
Bring it home.
Yeah. Drop it low, bring it up slow.
So then what do you think Django would have given this?
It's definitely in the realms of perfectly acceptable.
Okay.
I feel like Django may have overly invested because it seems dark, gritty, you know, with like some story, and then he may reel it back and still, dude, I really liked that comic.
Yeah.
So he'd probably give it a...
6.
5, 6, yeah.
I was going to say 6.
It's a beautiful cover. And look at that cover.
Yeah.
I just realized below the water, the reflection below the water is a fleshed out human face of the original, the main guy. But above the water, it's just a bare skull.
The last one shot I read was Genesis, which was fucking awesome.
Genesis.
That by image, Eric Stevenson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a really cool one shot. So...
Yeah, you know. That was almost a graphic novel, though.
Yeah, it was thick.
Okay. Thank you for telling me about The Belfry. Sorry I wasn't able to read that. Let's bring it home with The Old Guard.
Okay, slamming it in.
Slamming it in, bringing it home, home running it, talking about it. The Old Guard. Roman, you have probably read more Greg Rucka than any of us. And I have not read a ton of Greg Rucka.
And he bugs the shit out of me.
And he bugs the shit out of Justin.
You don't like Greg Rucka.
And I get Brian Wood and Greg Rucka confused sometimes.
And he did... it's not Winter World. What was the one with the
Whiteout?
Whiteout.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's been all over the place, and he's really respectable, but he's got a lot of voice, and I really like voice when it's like Matt Fraction. I don't know if I like voice when it's Greg Rucka.
I have a lot of respect for Greg Rucka, and I think he's done some really cool stuff. I also feel similarly. I think that he's got a really strong voice, and it's just not a voice that I really want. So... I really respect the work, but I don't feel like it's the work for me. I feel like he does circle around a lot of like really familiar tropes. Like I don't think I've seen a book from him that's not like super hardcore cynical female badass, which is
that
to be fair, like how many guys this thing is super hardcore badass guy writer. So,
I haven't seen him.
It's a bias
right,
thing.
A male character in a while.
A long while.
And they all bleed together.
Yeah, like between Vale, Old Guard, Lazarus, Queen and Country, Stumptown. Like, all of them do fall into...
Wonder Woman.
His
mainstream
he's killing it there. Batwoman. That's not a complaint that's valid at all.
The complaint is in... It's a one-trick pony thing, not a guy doing women characters. Like, I would love... Like, I can't write women, female characters very well.
And I don't even necessarily think it's, like, a one-trick pony thing. Like, is a guy who writes male characters almost exclusively a one-trick pony?
That's true.
No, it's, like, writing what you know. Like, that's... If that's how you filter fiction, I support it. But it's easier for me to grapple with male characters. Again... That doesn't mean I only exclusively read male characters, and I enjoy reading female characters. But, like, and this, the female protagonist here is kind of just this, like, sex-crazed, hardcore, timeless being.
She's a Highlander that is also experiencing sex in the way that she experiences war. Like, she's just trying new things out because she's bored. Because when you're old...
I'll see you guys this evening. I'm going to take a shower and find somebody to...
That line bothered me so much.
Like that... Yeah.
If you're going to build a character that wants to have lots of sex because you're kind of materially bored, I get that. But why throw it in at that moment?
Like, he had already very effectively done that with this whole, like, with this other guy that she's with. And he's like, do you want my name? And he's like, don't tell me your name. Why not? Saves me the trouble of forgetting it. Walk out. And you're just like, okay. It's very just like, okay.
We want to know this girl is sexy and hard and badass. And that he, like, overwrote it.
My complaint, however, is not the story in this book, but it is the art. And
I love the fucking colors in this book.
So yeah, the colors are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got some dude, very strong like Hawkeye colors.
It's Gabriel Ba, dude. It is Casanova left and right. Those yellows and those purples.
So this guy did the art in Discipline by Pete Milligan. And I really liked the art in that. And that was like a really sexy horror book. And it took place within a lot of, like, confined spaces, and it didn't really matter. This art is really interesting to me because I really like the art. I really like it on a picture-to-picture basis, but I don't like it in terms of storytelling. I don't feel like any page led to another page, and I don't feel like backgrounds ever created a physical environment these characters were in. There was a lot of undepicted backgrounds, so it was just people and foreground, so it didn't ever feel like, as you were reading, that any scene took place in a part. So it was really hard to create, for me, a larger, like, narrative for this whole story. It was just sort of like, here's some faces talking, and all you did really was follow faces talking and like action poses in an undefined space. And I think that Greg Rucka is a complex enough writer, and he relies on nuance and a sophisticated plot enough that he needed a little bit more from the art. The art, like I said, image to image wise, I really liked. Like, I liked the faces, I liked the towns, I liked the colors.
Yeah, his cityscapes are beautiful because they're large color palettes, and they're kind of these blanked out images that are stone walls of color. There are certain scenes where I didn't really know where the traveling was going, or even that initial scene where she's fighting through history and sleeping with other people. There wasn't a huge link between there wasn't a solid time frame of when that was going on, and I couldn't tell if that was intentional or unintentional.
Yeah, and I do want to stress, like, I really do like this guy's art. I've only seen him on one other book, though, and I do think he's sort of cutting his teeth here. Like, he does a lot of nice figure work, and that's probably gotten him a fair amount of work. But I do think, like, just, like, panel-to-panel storytelling and what that entails is a pretty, again, like, I'll say nuanced thing that people develop. And I don't know. I just felt like... Even though, I'll say it like a 15th time, I really liked the art. It didn't feel up to the par that a Rucka book should have. Like, he's a top-tier writer, whether he's a writer that I really want to read or not. Like, he's definitely...
He's up there with Brubaker. Like, he drops a book and people are like, shit, Rucka's got a book out.
And it just, I don't feel like this art is maybe able to do as much with this story as he hopes to do. But again, picture to picture... Really pretty stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved this battle scene. Probably one of my favorite scenes at the end of the book. Just because it had that consistent effect from panel to panel. Where it's like, okay, now we're telling a story. You know, I want to know what the deal is with this axe that's featured on the cover, but then doesn't show up till the very end. That the main woman has.
She pulls out of nowhere.
But, and I like that panel. That's nicely done.
Yeah, I mean, the pictures are nicely done.
Yeah, and like the first one, I love this panel because it's kind of, it's very Frank Miller-esque, the battlefield and this woman and
silhouette.
The silhouette. But yeah, I had the same problem where overall...
It's a collection of good still shots rather than a flowing movement.
There's not a flow here. And, you know, and this is just one of my things. I just don't care about special ops teams, covert teams. Don't care at all. Yeah. Until the end when it's revealed that, okay, well, they're not only immortal, but they're injured and instantly heal. And then I was a little interested because I want to know what that's about. And but up until that point, I was like, I don't care about these characters.
I remember Deacon telling us about this book, and like, there's four main characters that are all timeless, and we particularly follow the female of them, but there are three other male characters. And I feel like when he was pitching it to me, he was telling me that, like, it's they're, like, historically significant characters.
They're just characters from that sprouted from different histories. So one became immortal in the Renaissance. One became immortal in the, you know, Alexandria.
Okay. So it's because as I was reading that wasn't conveyed, and I kept thinking, like, I should go online and read the pitch of this book so I can filter this into something that makes sense.
I don't
think
they're all, like, former historical
It's not
people.
Like, oh, that's Merlin, and
yeah,
he, okay.
And this is Joan of Arc.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think it's that. I think it's people who have sprouted up throughout different times that are now one super badass agent.
Tell me about Joan of Arc, Justin.
You know, she does stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, actually, tell me about Joan of Arc. Do you know anything about her? Do you know anything about her?
She was French. She Christians didn't like her? No, she was super Christian.
She was Christian, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a saint.
She heard voices that she thought was religion, and then people were like, you're crazy, and they burnt her? Is that right?
It was more, she incited war. She didn't incite war. She tried to stop war, right? Because she was like burnt as
man. I mean,
what?
Something happened.
Yeah, so it felt like I kind of thought that these four main protagonists were
more significant.
Yeah, like possibly going to be. I kept trying to reconfigure their names in my head. I was like, the book, like, who could that possibly be as an abbreviation for a historically significant character? I would have liked that more, I think. I am interested.
They're badass for. They're longstanding badasses.
Yeah, I mean, I respect Rucka enough that I do think that there's a larger thing going on here. I think that there's something big and cool going on.
Well, they
on
got
here.
Caught. People know that they're them. Somebody out there knows that they're immortal and they got caught. And that's kind of the hook in your mouth. It's like, wow, these super cool people who get their shit done and leave.
And have been around forever.
Yeah,
and
don't
stuff.
Get caught. Now got caught. And one girl got killed in it. When they came in, they blasted that girl, and she died in their arms. She wakes up days later, so she's one of them now.
Okay. It in a world where
2 years ago, Image could create a number one that would almost inevitably slap you in the fucking face.
We now get a lot of Image number ones that are just like, this is an interesting story, and. You know, that's good.
It's TV pitch writing, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's TV pitch writing, or it's the bell curve. You know, we reach a climax point, and you can't sustain that forever. So we got a lot of books coming out from Image now that are at least interesting, but don't immediately make me feel like they're going to be my favorite book. This book seems interesting. I don't know how much I want to keep reading it. And, I mean, I'm not, obviously I'm not an arbiter of taste. Like, all I'm saying is, like, it's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I do really think that there are some people who would find this story interesting. And I think
it's super appealing to a lot of readers that I know. Like, a lot of my friends would like this book. Unfortunately, if I had to pick and choose in the oversaturation onslaught of Image books, I don't know if this would be one of my books.
I guess we haven't heard Roman's opinion on this book yet. What was your experience reading The Old Guard, Aristotler?
Danke. kind of the same as yours. I don't know. I'm probably not going to read the second issue. I mean, there's sequences. I just found this sequence I like where they're in Afghanistan and they go in this home here and she's speaking to the matriarch of the family, trying to find this guy that's hiding out in there. And I like this sequence because the woman gestures just with her eyes. She looks to where the guy's hiding, and
that was really well done.
That was well done. You know, the inner front cover here, they talk about it's a story about time and age and ages and about friendship and love and regret. I thought, okay, well, those are some interesting subjects.
Those are things that I like and dwell on.
those are things that I care about. But then I didn't see any hints of those. I guess time, maybe, and age. In here, and I want to know, well, I want to get to the, I guess these people are friends. I didn't feel that. I think, like I said earlier, I don't care about any of these characters. I'm just meh.
Yeah.
It just didn't do it. Of the books we read, this was the one I was the least interested in.
That axe, though.
The axe is cool. It's a
got a good design. I think the color palette is great.
Is the term lebdrist? It's a lebdrist?
Somnambulist?
No, that's a sleepwalker.
Oh.
Lebdrist, the double bladed.
Oh.
It's where we get, you know, the
yeah,
the X-rated stuff.
Yeah. wow. So cut to yesterday, 11:30. Justin and I are standing
PM
in this
or
AM? AM.
Stumbling around.
Justin and I are going through a whole bunch of books to get ready, and we're talking about what we want to talk about on the podcast. And we chose almost exclusively books that were either a number one or Astro City, the 100th issue, which
things that seemed
new or exciting. We also were going to read Quantum Team's Argo by Black Mask, number one, but we all weren't able to read that one as well. When Django's not here, things fall apart even more than they normally fall apart.
Yeah, we get a allotment of fall apart and on multiple levels.
We are also killing it, though. Yeah, when some good stuff is happening.
Hey, you don't even know, even though there was a fire and a mugging and maybe an abduction.
And
that
I've
was
never, I've truly never seen the Tills as un... They're off. Django, the Tills are off. All right,
shit's falling apart, but not because of you being
balanced them.
Well, that's true. Listen, we're giving Roman a practice time, and yeah. Roman's doing the books while you're.
And
gone.
I don't know how I did it, but I broke a wall behind the pinball machine.
we were
killing
taking
it.
The
beat. You beat Django's high score.
Yeah, that's true.
We hid the bodies, though.
Yeah, we hid the bodies under the floorboards. I had a lot of excitement to just try a bunch of new stuff this week, and that is, again, a trap I always fall for. I'm very excited by shiny and new things, and I need to learn to appreciate the things that I know
sometimes
and love in
you
my
get
life.
Sometimes you know, a butterscotch cappuccino, and sometimes you get, you know,
I know that
orange reference. Milk.
Wow. That was true. That was resonant. How many aged, dusty Djangos would you give the old guard?
Two for the axe, two for the rapid expansion of well-done action shots. I felt like the shots in the... Yeah, four. Rucka.
Romstad.
I'm vacillating between. I'll give it a four because, you know, Rucka's proven himself before. I mean, this could go somewhere. I might not stick around to see about where that's going to go. But is this a mini or is this an ongoing?
Good question. He's got Lazarus as an ongoing, so I wouldn't be surprised if this was a mini.
And unfortunately, I haven't read I haven't read Stumptown. I haven't read Lazarus. I've read his Wonder Woman, his first run on Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and then probably Batwoman.
I read Batwoman, yeah. I keep on wanting to call it Winter World. It's not Winter World, it's...
Whiteout.
I really liked Whiteout. I read Queen and Country, really liked that. So he's got to be going somewhere with this.
Yeah, I guess my complaints with this book are more that it feels like a strange mishmash.
Those words are a mishmash.
Storytelling and art. I think that there's some really strong... Some strong strengths to both. Wow. Nice Englishing.
The strong strengths are really strong.
Yeah, there's some strong
strengths. The weak parts are really weak.
Like I said, I really do like this artist. I flipped through every issue of The Discipline as it came in because I like his imaging. And Rucka is somebody that I have a lot of respect for. And I just, I don't know. It made me hard to take the seriousness of what I think his storytelling does with this art and it made me feel like I should be more serious about this guy's art, which I don't know. That axe, though. But again, I feel like that axe was supposed to be slightly more emphasized. Like, he does draw the axe earlier on in the issue before that whole last thing, like when they're in the helicopter.
But it's a cool fucking design for an axe.
Yeah, I wish I could put my finger better on that whole dilemma of like, well, I really liked the story and the art, but I don't think they fit. But that is how I feel, and I would give it a 5.5 how many dusty age of Django's. Okay. Yeah, because I feel like it's you got some good components in the stew, but like I made some enchiladas recently, and I put a ton of garlic in them. And I learned that Mexican food doesn't necessarily need a ton of garlic in it, even though I love Mexican food and I love garlic. It was sort of like that. It was sort of like
not
preparing.
Everything goes good with eggs on top, baby.
I know, but I keep thinking if you throw everything in the blender and just blend it, it's going to be good. This is one where I think that Django would have liked it more than I would have.
Yeah, he would have. Yeah. Well, Frank Miller.
Yeah, that's true. The Frank Miller shout out. There was no lightning bolts, but there was definitely silhouettes.
That's true. Yeah.
Oh, the whole lightning bolts next to reeked of Frank Miller stank.
I'm going to say it's 6 Django from Django.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. There you go, Django.
Roman, what do you think? 6, 7, 5?
I thought I already gave mine.
No, just what would Django?
Oh, what would Django?
Give
he'd probably, yeah, I think he'd probably give it a 6. Solid 6. This seems more like a Django book.
Okay. Well, listen, if this place is still standing, if it hasn't burnt down, if the Tills ever find a correct way to actually be at what they're supposed to be at, if Roman ever decides to come back.
You guys aren't going to be here the end of next
if
week.
If I don't
so.
Make it out of the church cult, man.
Then hopefully we'll see you guys next week. But, I mean, 19 episodes, that's a pretty good run. So
we should do something special for the 20th.
We should.
Riverdale.
Yeah, actually, we really hope to do a Riverdale podcast in the next week or so. Django has a text message with our phone number in it, and
that's
I don't
there.
Have it.
Listen
so,
to prior episodes.
Yeah, we're gonna. If you guys have any questions or anything you want to talk to us about, or if you want to tell me that I'm wrong about something, I am. Please tell me. You can give us a call, and yeah, we'll see you guys soon. Everybody have a nice week, Roman.
Thank you. Pleasure
Justin.
As always.
Pete.
That was Justin being abducted.
Come back, Justin!